where the wind comes sweeping down the plain. And the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
So you are Sean Heim. Where can we find you at on the Twitters?
At Sean Heim.
Pretty easy.
S-H-A-W-N-H-I-M-E. And one of those good things about having a unique name. You can pretty much get your name on anything. Web or Twitter or anything else.
Awesome. And so how long have you been doing our legislative updates?
Since the beginning of the OCLA Ed chat from its inception, kind of at the beginning, worked out early on that any month that had a fifth Sunday came around about regularly enough that it was a good time to do legislative update, look at the upcoming legislative session, legislative review, you know, whatever that time of the year called for.
I love it. Honestly, the legislative updates have gotten me back into being involved. I took a hiatus for a while just because my husband said I was angry all the time. And so, you know, when I had kids, I put it away for a little bit. I'm back, and gosh, I'm back to being angry, huh?
Well, we all try to keep it as I sense that in your tone. I try to find as many positives as I can so I don't go crazy with anger or frustration.
I love it.
Sometimes it's very difficult.
Well, thank you very much for all you do for this chat and for keeping us updated with OSS. VA too, so I really appreciate that. So I've got a couple questions here, just wondering what you think about them. We haven't gotten to budget yet, right? I mean, as far as I know, it didn't happen yesterday.
No, we do not have a budget yet. The governor came out yesterday and basically chastised the legislators for not passing a budget. Said they had 12 days to work with, so now that would mean today we have 11 days.
All right.
To pass a budget.
What do you think the final budget might look like? I mean, in Sean Heim's world, what's that look like?
Well, I think the first thing we need bold leadership. That we don't have a budget yet because we've had some budget bills out there, ideas out there, and there's not a sense of urgency at the legislative level yet to put aside partisan politics, to put aside we'd taken a stance on no new taxes, 5 years ago, or at a time when our revenue was coming in very high. It's easy to say, well, I'm not going to vote for new taxes. But now that every core service in Oklahoma, especially public schools, are faltering under the weight of budget cuts and we're losing teachers by the droves, and it's really time for those people to step up and say, I was elected to lead, not elected to stand on someone else's ideas of passing taxes or not passing taxes. We need to do what's best for our state. So I don't think we have that sense yet. So I think it'll be a little while before we get a budget. Hopefully we get that sense. I think there's a very good possibility right now that we'll have a special session in June because they don't come to a budget consensus before then.
Man alive. Yeah, there are so many things that race through my mind when you can't get it figured out. So with that being such a dangling thing out there in education, do you think there's any way they touch on equity in the funding?
I don't. I think their big boys piece is just trying to find revenue to fill the hole and to fund the needs for core services. I am encouraged that they see a need to fund education at a higher level. They see the need to increase teacher compensation. I mean, those two have, over the last 2 to 3 years, we've come a long way on those two issues with our legislative leaders. Now it's, do they have the political will to pull the trigger or push the green button on enough tax increase measures or revenue-raising measures to make it happen.
Okay. So tell me what you think about the new A to F reform.
Well, I think that's obviously we were disappointed because we love the work done behind the scenes on it, on multiple indicators. I think we need school accountability. We need information for our teachers, parents, community members about our schools. But as of yet, no one has created a single letter grade system nationally that does that. So far, those have been indicators of poverty. So you can check the previous letter grade system that we have had and we currently have, and it tracks with poverty very closely. You know, they say this one won't. I think our role now that it's in law, is our role is to become part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Yeah.
And help as they're creating the rules and the regulations and formulas, then we have to make sure it's the best system we can possibly have. Good thing is right now it's only a framework, so there's still a lot of work to be done that can ensure that it's the best possible 8AS system in the country.
Awesome. So do you have a favorite question that went into the chat? Was there one that you were like, I just want to see what everybody says about this one?
probably my favorite one usually is about solutions. I always, you know, from the time we started it, one of our goals and one of the goals here at the OSSBA is to not be the group of no. You know, don't continuously be against things. Bring our solutions to the table. So, and we've seen that over the years, and the chat has kind of followed that as we had the RSA issue, and we came up with the Great Placement Committee, where it allowed the teacher and the parent to work it out and make the final decision for that third grade student on RSA. Well, this week it was really more about the budget. We're all talking about the budget. We're all talking about, so, you know, I put a graphic out on all the things they were thinking about doing with to increase revenue, and ask, you know, the question was, you know, what would you do to balance the budget? What would you do for a long-term funding plan for public education? So I was really, really interested to see what at least the Oakland chatters thought were the best methods of raising revenue for Oklahoma.
Yeah. So I would say I'm still pretty darn green in education and in policy. One of the things, I wrote a blog piece, a very naive blog piece, a year ago talking about budget. Why do you think, do you think we'll get to a point when we can start looking at our own local budgets for districts and being able to rearrange some monies? Like the example I gave was, you know, you've got an emergency home fund, you've got a vacation fund, and you know, your checking account or whatever. And if your hot water heater goes out, you steal from your vacation fund to pay for the hot water heater. Do you think there will be a time when we can start looking at our local monies or our district monies and start getting some flexibility with how we use those monies?
Well, I think there is flexibility within the system currently. Probably the biggest difficulty is you've already stolen all your vacation money and your hot water heater money.
Okay.
To pay for things, because currently schools, for instance, building fund is commonly used to take care of our buildings, upkeep, those things. But it's kind of like your safety net, where schools are now stealing from their building fund, because you can legally also use building fund money for utility cost and maintenance salaries, so, you know, like your custodians.
Okay.
And maintenance.
Okay.
People. So people are using it to pay OG&E and Oklahoma Natural Gas and their custodians, so they're deferring maintenance on their buildings in order to you know, keep the lights on, literally, by paying for the light bill. You can do that for a while, but at some point, you're going to have to put a new roof on the building. You're going to have to replace carpet. You're going to have to paint the, you know, do those things to the building itself. So there are some of those things happening, and there are some flexibility there. We have more and more schools that are using bond funds for things like technology and textbooks, which generally, you know, historically have been general fund money.
Right.
That frees up money in the general fund. The problem is, you brought up equity earlier. Our biggest problem is with equity, because all schools aren't equal when it comes to capital improvement, building fund, and bond fund. So those with more local wealth have, you know, property value, have an easier time and more opportunity to shift the cost to building fund or to bond funds than those that
sure.
have very, very little local wealth.
Sure. No, that makes a ton of sense. All right. Well, I really appreciate your time, and thank you so much for chatting with us here.
Hey, you're welcome. Anytime. I'm glad you're doing it.
All right.
Welcome back. This is the Okla Said, the official Okla Ed podcast, where we talk about everything that happens from the Sunday night Okla Ed chat. I am Aaron Barnes, and we've got Scott Hazelwood here. Scott.
Hello, Aaron. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
We missed you last week.
Thank you. I really missed, taking part last week. I was kind of sad.
Well.
That I missed it.
Yeah, right. As it turns out, you weren't really necessary. The podcast still went out.
It turns out I'm probably not necessary for half the things I do in life.
But at least one of us is necessary for the podcast every week, so we're glad you're back.
True. All right. So this week we had Mr. Sean Heim hosting. He's the executive director of OSSBA, and that is the Oklahoma State School Board Association. And he does our policy chats regularly. Yeah?
Yes, I would think that's a fair thing to say. And for those of you that are new to the Okla Ed chat and wonder why a policy chat showed up this week, there are certain months during the calendar year that have an extra Sunday in them, five Sundays, as it were. And on that fifth Sunday, Okla Ed is devoted to policy.
I love it. Maybe during the months of session, where our legislators are in session, we shouldn't wait till a fifth Sunday month, because and I think that one of my tweets in here goes to show some of our people just don't know enough. And I'll be that person. I mean, I'll admit to being that person on many issues. I try to stay as involved as possible in education, but we have to be involved in our state and know what's going on with these bills that are being presented.
It's hard to do, but OSSBA and other entities like them do a great job of sharing out what the action items are and what the bill does for education. So this is an important service that they provide. But yeah, you're right. In the spring, we almost need like a daily policy.
Gosh,
chat.
Yeah.
I mean, ooh-wee.
It so, gets busy.
Quite
well,
busy.
Let's dive in. You want to?
Oh, yeah, sure. Let's do it.
All right. Question number one, teacher shortage. Oklahoma continues to face a teacher shortage crisis. What can we do legislatively and non-legislatively to solve the issue? So I sit on the teacher shortage task force for the State Department.
Go on.
And some months I think, man, yes, we had a very productive meeting. And then some months I think, why are we here? That's probably the way it is with any task force out there. But it just seems like everything we need to do, we need some money for. We can try our best to do things without money, but at some point, you're hitting your head against a brick wall. I think that continuing those conversations need to happen, but I also think that finding a way to share outwardly the things that happen on that task force each month needs to happen as well. I know I get an email, but I don't know if everybody gets it because, I sit on the task force, so I'm sure that's the reason I'm getting it. But I wish we could share with the public the things that we're talking about. I mean, I can. There's nothing that we're not allowed to talk about. I just wish there was a way for others to see what we're talking about regularly as well. So if there are people out there with ideas, they can combine their forces with us.
Yes, I agree. Because I think it's important to understand why we have a teacher shortage. But, and I'm not trying to disparage the work of the task force. But on the other hand, our legislature was passing a framework for establishing a teacher raise. And I think sometimes the task force can be viewed the same way. We already know we have a teacher shortage.
Right.
Why do we need a task force? Like it's an
issue. So there are three different groups that work on this task force. There's the legislative group, there's the community group, and then there's the business group. And some of the groups have crossover, but I know last year we had it the second half of the year. There were a few items that made it into bills that we had an emphasis on. You know, we had an impact, the group, on the legislative side. On the community side, you'll see some things coming out soon. You know, Shaped My Life is a big campaign that the OSDE has going on right now. They also, something that came out of the task force was Ed Talks, and we all know what TED Talks are, but we have several teachers who have highlighted why they teach. So Shaped My Life is the public telling why teachers were amazing. The Ed Talks are teachers saying, you know, why they do this, what renews their passion. And so hopefully hitting it from both sides and then sharing those things out with the public will create some awareness as well. But the task force, I don't know, we're trying to re-image the teacher. You know, like when you think of a teacher, the quintessential teacher, I suppose, what does that person look like? Typically, it's a middle-aged woman, probably white, could be wearing a pencil sweater. You know what I'm saying? Like the ideas that people have that go around teachers are not necessarily what our teachers look like these days, and how we can get a more diverse population, how we can get, you know, the idea of teaching to be in a more positive light. I mean, our teachers don't even talk well about the profession sometimes. So getting anybody else to come and be a part of this profession is hard when we're bad mouthing it. You know, and so just trying to come up with ideas to help the conversation move in a different direction is kind of what we're doing.
Got it. That sounds great. And I hope that there's some fruits of your labors. It sounds like some of it is panning out a little bit with the teacher talks and the what was the other one? Not the teacher.
Shaped My Life.
Yeah. That's the one with like Gundy and those guys, all the different people, right?
Oh, yeah. And so they had somebody from the Flaming Lips this month. You know, Oklahoma's got some
star power.
Yeah, and so getting some of those people to come and take part. I know G.T. Bynum did one. He's Tulsa's mayor. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've got to get our educators sharing some of those things out and knowing about them also.
I knew about the Shaped My Life one. I didn't know about the teacher talks until just a couple of weeks ago when our mutual buddy Anthony was talking at it.
Yes. Yes. It's a brand new thing. His was one of the first.
Very nice.
I liked what Alan Lehman said about this. And if you want to find Alan on the Twitters, he is @Alan_Lehman. He says, I don't think there is a simple answer or an easy answer. It will require large scale shift in priorities. Funding is a start. Sheesh, there are so many moving pieces to this. It's like a Rubik's Cube. And I feel like we got to find out the pattern for the Rubik's Cube. I hate Rubik's Cubes. I've never solved a Rubik's Cube. And I feel like we got a giant fat Rubik's Cube on our hands here.
With like 17 faces instead of 6.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I really liked what John Bennett had to say, and he's a regular participant in Oakland Ed. He's currently in Virginia. He said, determine why oil lobbyists hate education. And that was interesting because it comes on the heels of an interview that was published where the oil lobbyist person was defending why they should pay such few taxes.
That's which is interesting. Well, and so I was at dinner last night, Scott, and I was sitting across from somebody who works for a company named Samson here in Tulsa. And Samson, I mean, they are an oil and gas company. And so I asked this question. I was like, you know, what is it about the taxes? You know, because that one is one that I just, it's on my radar this year for the first time. What is it? Why are people up in arms about this? And he was like, you know, I don't know, because the margins for some of the companies are so thin that they're not making it. And Samson's one of those companies that is just not making it. They laid off 1,700 people about a month ago. And they're going from something like 4,000 wells to 350 within the next 2 months. Selling them off because they're just not able to make ends meet. And so that's one oil and gas company that seems like it might need some tax cuts. But I know that there are probably others that are getting fat and rich out there as well. And so I think generalizations are probably not helpful here. You know, we have to be informed about everything when we start throwing things out like that.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see what the oil lobbyist said, because you're the first one to tell me about this.
I can't remember where I saw it. It was on, it wasn't in a blog. It came through a news website, one of the Oklahoma City news websites. I can't remember which one it was. Yeah, it was interesting. And I think they led the charge too on trying to knock off the penny sales tax.
Okay.
If memory serves. So anyway.
Yeah, we got to find out why people are against.
Yeah. And if I'm wrong on that, please correct me. I am correctable. So if I've made an incorrect statement, I am all up for being corrected. Question two. How is the teacher shortage crisis impacting your school? And I would say that it's here at where I work. Our faculty advise, teach, and have their professional duties through the different committees that they're responsible to. So every time a faculty person retires or goes away and is not replaced, that increases the advisement load, that increases the teaching load, that increases the committee load. And at some point, you don't have time to spin all the plates at the university level. So I'm learning all about the university level stuff, obviously. But the same thing then with in high school, you know, a class of 50 in AP physics. Come on. That's good.
Insane. And I have no idea how some of these English teachers still assign essays, because that's like some of them are grading 300, 350 essays because they teach, you know, English 3 out there. And that's the only thing they do, are grading essays, grading essays, grading essays, grading essays. And I would think you'd probably get to a point where you're like, gosh, I am not going to assign an essay this week because I'm still not done reading the essays from last week, you know?
I mean, at what point?
I couldn't imagine.
Yeah. So anyway, Jay Rotert at, and he is at my Rotert. He said class size is too large, T's are doing more duties, and it makes it more difficult to focus on improving classroom instruction.
Indeed. I think that that's very true. You know, I am in a weird place with some of this stuff based on my own politics and where I work. Epic doesn't have a teacher shortage crisis. Scott, we actually have, the last we checked, and that was about a week and a half ago, we have 1,300 applications sitting, you know, waiting to be reviewed. And it's almost like you have to know somebody to say, hey, will you pull up this application and look at it so that you can get seen here? And you know, there are a lot of things that are different about our school. I do think we work insanely hard having to have all grade levels and all subjects. So that is something that's very scary. But I think that some of the things we do right are our class sizes being about 30 students. And the pay, it's very controversial, sorry, but we do performance-based pay. And the teachers that are performing well, getting good outcomes, and we base it off of, you know, the flawed state report. So we know it's semi-flawed too. We're looking forward to changing some of the bonus structure this next year with the new A to F report card. But it makes it worth it for those teachers who go above and beyond. And if you don't do well, you know, you don't get paid as well. And there have been lots of news cycles devoted to our pay structure. And some of them have gotten good light. Some of them have gotten bad light. But I think it's one of the things that contributes to us not having a teacher shortage. And it'd be interesting to see if a district out there, you know, just... I wish that other districts got to play around with their budgets a little bit more. And we'll get to it in another question in a minute. But being able to toy with or experiment with performance pay, you know, letting teachers opt into it and see if it's worth it, might be something to explore, because I know I love it personally, but I'm one of those people who is always in education. It's my passion, it's my hobby, it's my job, and so I like that I get paid well for it. Jack Reed, who is at JLReed2011, says, we have fewer offerings for our students and crowded classrooms. We lost 20 teachers this year and another 4 for next year. And I couldn't imagine working in a school where, I mean, golly, every time you lose a teacher, that's, I mean, what's the average class size now for schools? Like 35?
Probably in the high school. I know in the younger grades, they're pushing 30 for first and second grade.
So, I mean, just having that many kids now going to the other teachers, you're raising class sizes up, not incrementally, but when every time you lay off a teacher, that affects another set of classrooms because those kids have to be somewhere. You know, right. They've got to be taught, and you're just pushing that load and giving each student less space time time you lose a teacher.
Right. When I was at Memorial, one of the things that happened was, this was kind of at the beginning of when everything started to kind of hit the fan funding-wise, and the English department lost a teacher, and they weren't going to replace her. So you're taking the 150 kids that she saw every day, and now you're redistributing those 150 kids.
And essays.
Yeah, and essays through three different teachers, because those were the English 3 teachers or whatever. So now instead of 4 English 3 teachers, now there's only 3, and you have to redistribute those 150 kids. So that's 50 students more per teacher. I mean, that's a lot.
That's insane. It's absolutely insane. I wish that some of our legislators, which I know many teachers out there have offered, come sit in my class for a week. Mm-hmm. You come and be a part of us for a week. See what it's like. I wish some of those legislators would take our teachers up on that, because then they would actually see it. It would become way more personal to them to get this issue fixed. And I hear we're in session today and no budget on the agenda for today.
Not until the last couple of days of the thing. The other issue is, too, you know, we do have legislators in our building for their principal for a day situation, but a lot of times on the principal for a day, you show up, you have a donut, you have a cup of coffee, you chat, you wander, and you're out of there by lunch. You know, you're right. We need to have a sustained presence where some of these legislative leaders who feel that teachers don't do much hang out, they write the lesson plans, they're in our team meetings, they're grading. Let them get the whole lowdown.
Right. And I don't think a day can do anything. A day is you're getting the best of the best. You're getting, this is the perfect situation. I mean, because nobody wants a legislator to walk into their school and see things running amok. So let's be honest. The day that the legislator is there, they're probably seeing a pretty ideal day.
Probably.
So question 3, we could probably spend an entire podcast on question 2. Question 3, what is the most important OCLA Ed non-budget legislation being considered this year? And I think Tyler Bridges hit it. These are definitely things that I am big time passionate about, is RSA and A to F. I think those were big changes, and allowing the parent and teacher voice to remain within RSA is huge. And I think figuring out another way, finally, to grade these schools I look forward to what can come of it next year.
Yeah, indeed. That's a good one. I liked what Dawn Collins had to say. And she is at Collins_Dawn. Anything attempting to manage the impact damage of the third grade retention legislation. And I think I tweeted somewhere along here, I missed in teacher training class where we needed to offer high stakes testing to 8 and 9 year old kids. Like
the first year these kids are in state testing, we're going to attach something like this to that? I mean, I'm all for a third grader needing to know how to read before leaving third grade, because in fourth and fifth grade, you start reading to learn. It's not learning to read anymore. You're reading to learn. You're going to fall even farther behind if you don't know how to read. But it seems like a pretty punitive damage to tie such high stakes into a third grader's first state test. And Levi and I got into this a little bit, Levi Patrick, and he said, so what would you do? And I was like, why not have a portfolio for those third graders? Let them show off everything they do know without it being an ABCD test and without it being, I don't know, just so punitive. One snapshot on a single day when in April, the kids have probably seen about 80% of the content. You know, I don't know. It just seems like an unfair setup for me.
Should you hold a student back for not being able to read if they've successfully managed the rest of third grade? I mean, they can do their math, they can do their science, they can do their grammar or whatever. I mean, do you want to really hold a I don't know. I have a problem with high stakes testing in general, especially so in third grade. And Claudia Swisher also had a great tweet. She goes, we don't expect all 14-year-olds to be 5'7 and 120 pounds.
No, yeah,
I mean, we learn at different rates. You and I learn at different rates. Kids learn at different rates. They're just, my biggest issue with that is we have this super strict policy that was not created with input from educators. And that's my biggest beef.
Well, and how about we fire a few more third grade teachers so that we can make classroom sizes a little bit bigger so that they get even less face time for reading?
Right. Yeah.
This it just makes sense to me. Or how about grab another emergency certification, you know, and throw somebody in there who, you know, I don't know. We have so many emergency certifications, and I don't want to down any of those people. My husband is ALT certified, and he is doing an amazing job teaching these kids.
There's some great ALT certified teachers. Great.
Totally, totally. But we are throwing people into classrooms right now so we can have a head to manage 30 kids. And who knows if they're doing a good job, and they'll be gone at the end of the year unless they do get that ALT certification. So what's it matter? You know, well, it matters a great deal, in my opinion. We've got to find a way to cut down on emergency certs, but what are you going to do? I mean, who are you going to put in those places where all those, I mean, how many, 1,900 emergency certifications this year? 1,900?
There's been a lot, and I'm not sure how many total. I tried to look it up the other day, and it was just staggering. And Kim Blodgett had tweeted, you know, at one point, her first answer, I think, to question one was, you know, we need to make higher, it starts with higher ed, and they need to make it easier. And I sort of agree with, I see what she's saying there. You know, it does come down to higher ed because we need to have teachers prepared from the higher ed standpoint. We need them prepared for their classrooms, but we also don't want to just accept anybody and everybody and just crank them out, then that's no different than an emergency certification. I mean, there does need to be some high quality about it.
Right, right.
So question four then, what legislation currently being considered would be the most detrimental to Oklahoma schools?
So I saw Jason James, who is at James409Jason. He said, for the record, I'd like to see Oklahoma legislators put a 2-year hiatus on Okla Ed laws so they can see if their current laws are working, which doesn't answer the question. But I totally agree with this because, I mean, every year, like somebody's just trying to get their name on a city street and they're coming up with bills that... I mean, I wrote a blog post about one last year, Scott. Did you know that we are now able to use cane swords and daggers? We weren't originally allowed to, but we had to amend a bill so that we can. You know, that people spent time on that. People spent time debating and considering that. When who does that affect? Cane swords and daggers.
I like to go out and cane sword the tree. And
I'd like to go out and cane sword a...
Oh, careful.
Anyway, all right. Question five. No, you've got something to say.
Greg McCourtney, who is at GM McCourtney, I liked what he said. He said, the version of the budget that doesn't have any additional revenue, thus resulting in another round of major cuts for our schools. And I think my tweet on this was the budget. The legislation currently being considered most detrimental is our budget. We are really struggling with that right now. Big time.
Yeah. All right. Question five, RSA. How important is it that legislature pass House Bill 1760 and Senate Bill 84 to make the parent committee permanent and delay including limited knowledge students for a year?
Gosh, Jeffrey Corbett, who is our PTA, Parent Teacher Organization, Twitter presence, he is at Jeffrey Corbett. He said, nothing is more important than T's and P's, having a voice in the decision of retention. A test doesn't know the child. And I would just add to that, one of the staples of the Republicans' conservative point of view is that everything should be local control, right? They preach it all the time. It needs to be local control, local control, local control. Then my question to them is, why is this not in the purview of local control? That's my question for them. Like, how do you defend that this particular piece is not local control?
No, I mean, and everybody's pushing local control. Yeah, it should be up to the district. It should be. Anyway, that's it. My tweet I found on this mirrors one that we see later here, but answer five is, so okay, legislature is for parent voice when it comes to vouchers, but not when it comes to third graders. Anyone see a conflict here?
Boom, right?
Boom! I mean, yeah, come on. Parent voice, parent choice. We have to have a bill that says parents should get a say?
Oh, no. Excuse me, Aaron. On that one, parents, no. We know better.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Let's move on. Question six.
The budget. How have budget cuts impacted your school or students?
So, Rick, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, how does it not these days?
Yeah. And our two answers here semi-mirror each other. They go in different directions, but bigger classes, fewer electives, reduced funding for activities, teachers and principals leaving faster than ever. That was by Rick Cobb there.
Superintendent of Middell.
Who probably doesn't know anything either.
Yeah. God bless him. Jennifer Lee, at Jennifer_Lee_E. Class sizes are up, class options are down, positions absorbed, science without labs, and it's going to get worse, in all caps.
I mean, yeah, how could it not get worse? $1 billion?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that what we're looking for these days?
Yeah, that's what we're looking for. I mean, I wrote a blog
post. Look under your pillow. Under your pillow.
It's not there. I wrote a blog post. I said, you know, our friend Dallas, who basically is within two heartbeats of a heart attack with every rant he has these days, and there's plenty of things to rant about. He just is so spot on with some of this, and he points out some of these issues that we're talking about right now. And I don't think he was in chat, which is probably good for his health. But
yeah, probably helped him stay alive another day.
But I wrote a blog post over the weekend that talked about, you know, what if we just need to get rid of any secondary activity in our schools? None. Just zero it out, and then that will create funding, right, that we can then use to pay for teaching positions, because that's where we're at. And I hate to even say that, because my own children are use that secondary stuff. They are in the band. I enjoyed coaching. The relationships and the things you learn through that complement what you're learning in the classroom. But my goodness, if you take a small rural Oklahoma school town with no basketball on Friday nights, the community will be upset. If you take Union football off of Friday night lights, the community will be upset. And I guarantee you, at that point, there will be such an uproar, somebody will have to listen.
Well, that's a beautiful segue into question seven on the budget. How do you create a long-term funding plan for education and teacher compensation? I forgot to put who wrote it, and I'll go out and find it, and I will add it back into the show notes. But teacher compensation equals loan forgiveness. How long does it take an entry-level teacher to pay off loans at the minimum payment schedule? And I know that there are things out there that exist. We've got Title I. If you work in a Title I school for so many years, you can get loan forgiveness. If you know, there are different criteria to get loan forgiveness. But have you ever looked into what it takes to get that loan forgiveness taken off?
I haven't, no.
It is a bunch of hoops to jump through. I started the process and I was like, oh gosh, I'm a little too busy for this right now. And then I haven't picked it back up. But I've been in a Title I school for 6 years now, which is more than the criteria, but you have to essentially write an application, fill out the application. I mean, it's insane the hoops you have to jump through. I think if we had a little bit easier of a process to help out with some of that stuff, it might help. It's another way to compensate teachers if they don't have that minimum payment on their student loans to pay for. I don't know. But then what do you do for the people who, you know, paid for school themselves or got scholarships? They get nothing, so that doesn't seem fair either. I think, you know, I'm a little biased here, but Travis Barnes at T-Barnes 211, he's my husband.
Hey, do you know that guy?
Yeah, he's kind of a stud muffin. Oh. Anyway, he tweeted out, huge fail, Okla Ed, not another dime needs to be taken from taxpayers. Government waste is the gold mine, and until it's confronted, we're done. You know, and I think there are a lot of things that go into that. Government waste is huge. But in my opinion, and I've written a blog piece too, the way we spend our money at schools seems disturbing to me. You know, at home, in our home lives, and I know it has to be set up, you know, because of the rule book gets created because all of a sudden a new rule needs to be made because somebody, you know, disobeyed. But the financial planning for public schools, it's insane. And it is a class in a master's program. You know that, like how to figure out the budget.
Right. Like it gets its own class.
Yeah. Yeah. At home, like I've got a couple of different accounts, you know, a savings account and a checking account. And we've got a vacation fund and we've got the emergency fund that are also things that are separate from those, you know, two accounts. And if my hot water heater breaks and my home fund is depleted, I'm going to take from my vacation fund. I'm not still going to Cancun if my hot water heater has bursted. And I think that I think that we've got to figure out a way that we can steal from one fund in schools to be able to pay for other things. And you know, taking away the activities, it doesn't pay teachers because the activity funds pay for some of those things. You know, like it's just crazy to me the way the formula has been set up for schools that they can't steal from one set of their money to pay for things that they actually need.
Right.
It's crazy to me.
Yeah. Each pot and the two pots can't share.
Yeah.
It's a challenge. Jennifer Cruz, who is at Jen Cruz 3032, said, diversify rather than only rely on oil and gas. Tax corps instead of the poor. And I found myself having a conversation with colleagues just yesterday. In Oklahoma, there's you can see it. It's cyclical. There is boom and bust with oil. I mean,
yeah,
that's the nature of it as a commodity. So why didn't we learn from this in the 80s and diversify how we handled state revenue? Why didn't we learn from this, you know, just recently with the downturn, you know? The price of oil is a commodity, so it goes up and down, it goes up and down, it goes up and down. So why haven't we already diversified this? And Jennifer said it way better than I could in 140 characters. But we have this setup where we just rely so much on the price of oil. And now, I could be wrong, but oil is not even the biggest industry in Oklahoma, I don't believe.
I don't believe it is anymore.
I think it's aerospace.
Yeah.
So... and I don't know, those aerospace guys get tax breaks. Just an aerospace engineer or whatever they are, they get a tax break, I believe. I thought I saw. So anyway, I don't know. It's just we're so dependent on one way of doing things, and now they're passing a cigarette tax and a gas tax, and the whole reason our penny sales tax didn't go through in the fall election was because all these legislators and political people said, no, that's a regressive tax. You're just taxing the poor. And now we have a cigarette tax and a gas tax. And one of the quotes that I saw was from a politician, one of our elected leaders, who said, well, the billionaire will pay just as much as the low socioeconomic person. And wasn't that the whole argument against in November?
Yeah. Well, and let's be honest here. That means, I mean, the cigarette one doesn't affect me because I don't buy cigarettes. But am I not still paying for my own raise if I'm taxed for my gasoline?
I mean, I guess you are. I don't mind paying a gasoline tax. No problem with that. I pay taxes on everything else. I really don't have a problem paying taxes. But the cigarette tax, the whole thing is we're trying to get people to stop smoking.
So there's another thing that'll go away.
So what happens? Like that one, we want to drive it down. So if you add a $2 sales tax on each pack of cigarettes, that's only going to get smaller because people are going to get cigarettes illegally or stop smoking. And then now what? I mean, grr. Okay.
All right.
Question 8. Back on the budget, how do we convey to legislators that OCLA Ed funding is not a Republican or Democrat issue? It is an Oklahoma obligation.
Yeah, I mean, kids don't have party obligations. Children do not belong to parties at this age. I think children should be off limits when it comes to party lines. I mean, really. Children, they don't... They're the ones that are most affected by all of this. I mean, teacher pay will affect me. I would love a raise, right? You would love a raise. And half of these educators would love a raise. But when it comes down to it, what you're doing when you remove and remove and remove and you remove is you're taking away from the kids. And there are no party lines when it comes to kids.
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I guess they could be, you know, some party lines or whatever, but they don't understand it like we do.
Well, and Angela Clark Little, she said, we also need to express to legislators to focus on our state and not their party right now. We have to become bipartisan around this issue. It is a huge problem. It is huge. A huge problem.
It's going to be huge.
And we don't have time to play favorites. We don't have time. We are running out of time here. We're $1 billion in the hole. Mm-hmm. We're out of time.
Yeah, I really liked what Heather Ballou, she is at Blueberry. She said, shouldn't we, all parties, be working towards schools that thrive and not merely survive year to year? Hashtag rhetorical, hashtag leave your legacy, hashtag Oakland Ed. And I thought that was a great tweet for this particular problem. At some point we can have, I think Governor Fallon tweeted that we were 50th in ranking on taxing businesses. That's great. But do businesses want to come here if we're not supporting their family with a good education? So right. That's a question you have to ask, right?
Right. All right. Question 9, last question of the chat, was on advocacy. How are you sharing your district's story with your legislators? And I love this because we do need to have more conversations with them. And Lori Wathen, who is at LSooner2, she said, OCLA Ed Chats, as a parent, this forum helps me understand the issues so I can effectively communicate with my legislators. I mean, I think we need to encourage more people to become a part of these OCLA Ed Chats, especially if this is where they're getting their information. You know, I think too few people are out there talking to their legislators. And I feel like we need to find more ways to have those conversations.
Yeah, for sure. That can be a challenge. I really liked what Kaz Nelson, who is at Kaz Nelson. She said, invite them to our school. Meet with them at OAESP, which is, I think, an administrative group, principal for a day at the Capitol. And she said, I think Mike Sanders, who is at Mike Sanders, follows our schools and myself on Facebook. And that, I think that's her rep. But she's right. We have to invite them out. We have to get them into our schools. We got to meet with them where they are. We can't just yell at them because just like you don't like to be yelled at, you know, it's one of those kind of deals. But yeah, for sure. We've got to, man, we just have to figure out a way to get, we have to help our legislators understand the struggles that we face. And I think sometimes we as teachers come off as a bunch of whiny kids just screaming for a raise. And then what happens? A legislator goes, well, how much money do you want exactly?
You know what? I'm almost at the point where, like, man, you fund my classroom. You get me the things I need to actually do my job so I'm not having to spend the money. Maybe we call it even. I mean, and I'm not speaking for all teachers here, obviously. But crap, I don't even have the stuff to do my job sometimes.
Right. Right. I agree. And I would even... And I've argued before, yes, as a teacher, do I want to be compensated for what I do? Yes, yes, I do. Please compensate me. But you know what I want more than that? I want our elected officials to honor and respect our profession. And I don't think they do that.
No, I think you're right there. Maybe some do.
Some do.
Somebody say, listen, most of the people that are in there right now, the majority of the people that are in there right now are first and second years. And so I think the more we can get a hold of these first and second year people and stop generalizing, we might be able to get some headway, but we do generalize a lot. And how many times have we said legislators, even this podcast and we're talking collectively there, but the first years, I mean, they're probably keeping their head above water right now with all the research they're having to do. So I want to lay off them just a little bit, but we also need them to answer their phones whenever we call up there.
That's fair. And we shouldn't generalize, but I think the voices that are loudest are sometimes the ones that sting the most.
For sure.
So there you go.
What was your favorite question of the night, Scott?
So I see that I left that blank. But I really like the question four, what legislation currently being considered would be the most detrimental? Because I feel like in so many different facets and areas, we get legislation from the House and from the Senate that just is no good for education. And we need to always be asking ourselves, you know, and paying attention to what is coming down the pipe, what's going to be detrimental to us. I mean, because what we have is, I don't believe that there's any teacher people, former educators in either body. I could be wrong. There may be one or two. So basically what we have is people who are not affiliated with education at all, writing laws about education. And, you know, like RSA came through there. It is not good legislation. And so I think we need to be vigilant about the different laws that our elected leaders are trying to push through. Because sometimes I'm just curious, like, what are they thinking when they're putting this together? Like the suspend third graders, or down to kindergarten, suspension of students out of school down to third grade, I think. I mean, I don't know. I have a hard time mandating that. I mean, I guess if a kid just really fouls it up big time, you have to handle that. But to make it state law, is it necessary? Like, do we have little baby Mark McGuire third graders running around who are 6'2 and 350 with arms the size of, I mean, what's the point?
Local control. Again, I think it needs to be on local control.
So anyway, that was my favorite question.
Mine was on the budget. How do we convey to legislators it's not a Republican or Democrat issue? I mean, again, these are our kids. Put your party aside for just a minute and just do what's right for the kids. I don't know. I don't see how anybody can think about their party when, you know, we've got this issue. I don't see why it should be a partisan issue.
Yeah, I don't get it either. You know, and I argued with my mom one time about it. She's very conservative in her views, and she wants teachers to get raises, and she feels like they are undervalued. But then when we talk about it, you know, she wants the future of the country to be bright, and she wants the future of the country to be forever good. And I go, but mom, if we don't take care of education now, there will be no future of our country. There will be no future lawyer. There will be no future House of Representatives. No, we, like, if we don't fix education now, 20 years from now,
right.
we're in even bigger trouble.
Right.
Ugh. So
my boom sauce tweet of the night was the same as yours. Why don't you share it?
Okay, so, and this was sort of vaguely mentioned earlier, but it came from Kelly Husted, who is at Husted Kelly. Funny how legs want parents to have choice with vouchers, but not when it comes to RSA. And
I think you boomed it earlier whenever I said it, so I'm going to boom it now. Boom!
I mean, whew.
Yeah.
These chats always get my blood going.
For sure.
Yeah.
What do we have going on next week?
I'm actually shopping for a house in Texas next week because, you know, we can't take care of our own. No, just kidding. But I did see where the Texas, their Texas legislature, I know every state has its foibles, but they had a bill that needed to be approved that was written to pump $1.8 billion with a B dollars into their educational system.
Oh my word. Like, oh my word. How we're neighbors. Can we send our legislators down for a day?
I don't know.
To share in some of the thought processes.
We do have Texas to thank for No Child Left Behind in some fashion, which created this nonsensical standardized testing, which has led indirectly to RSA. But I digress. Next week, Kim Blodgett will be hosting our chat. And it's called I graduated with a degree in education. Now what?
Well, now what is you have your pick of the litter on jobs, except for you're going to have to find a way to foot the bill for that whole education. No, I'm just kidding. We'll see what comes. We'll see what comes of it. But that happens at 8 p.m. next week on Sunday, Central Standard Time.
Isn't every Sunday at Central Standard Time our chat time?
Yes, it is.
Ooh, I like it. Well, all right.
All right. We switched it around that time.
All right, educators, you know what to do. Now it's time to go out and nominate.
We're saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, Oklahoma.